Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva again, the editor-in-chief of the journal, and I'm coming to you from an early morning in Vancouver so that I can have the opportunity to speak with a colleague late evening on a Friday night in Iran. I have the pleasure today of speaking with Sema Mortaz Hejri, who's a general practitioner in Tehran and recently graduated from Tehran University of Medical Sciences with both her MD and her PhD. The topic for today is a paper that she has coming out in the February 2013 issue of Medical Education entitled Academic Disintegrity Among Medical Students, a Randomized Response Technique Study. Sema, first and foremost, thanks for being on the podcast, especially given the late hour.
Thank you very much, and thank you for offering me this interview.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I was intrigued to speak with you for two reasons, actually. One is the actual content of your report, given that academic disintegrity is a real concern, although it's something that we often turn a blind eye to and don't have a lot of good data about. But the other reason is that the method that you've used to study the issue is one that isn't often seen within medical education. It's something that I've seen in epidemiological studies, but isn't commonly used and seems quite useful for sensitive topics like this one. So maybe, though, before we get into either of those, I can just ask you to tell our listeners why you chose to pursue this topic as part of your PhD study.
Mainly because I was studying medicine, and at the same time I was studying parallel medicine and PH, and I noticed that academic integrity is being disrespected in many ways among our students, and then I wanted to do something about it. It was my great concern. But I knew that it is a sensitive issue and most students will not give honest answers because they had concerns about potential consequences and embarrassments. So I decided to choose another way to investigate it. And as I was reviewing literature, I came up with this idea of using RRT. As you know, it wasn't used for investigating academic disintegrity. Just a few studies have used it, and it was used mainly for other issues like alcohol abuse or abortion or tax dodging and these things. And I thought that it may be a good way to use it for investigating academic disintegrity. So I talked with my supervisor about it because it was part of my MD and PhD thesis, and they persuaded me and encouraged me to follow this topic using this method.
It's a method that's perfectly suited for getting a sense of the prevalence of less than socially desirable behaviors. I suspect most of our listeners and readers won't have come across the randomized response technique. So can you tell them a little bit about how this procedure allows you to overcome some of those sensitivities and hopefully get more honest responses from people?
Yeah, it's actually a yes or no questionnaire. It's an anonymous questionnaire, but it is designed that you can take honest answers from your respondents because it guarantees confidentiality of answers because the researchers will not understand the main answer which is given to each question. Because for answering each question, you should use a random device, and after you use it, you should answer that question. For example, ask a question about if you have cheated in the previous exam. This is our sensitive question. For answering this question, we design a two-section question, section A and section B. Section A is an irrelevant question, or we can say innocent question, and the section B asks a sensitive question if you have cheated in the previous exam. For answering this question, you should use a random device, and that tells you which section you should answer. If it tells you you should answer section A, then you give a yes or no to section A. And if it tells you to answer section B, you give an answer, yes or no. But a researcher does not know which section you have answered. So the confidentiality of your answer is guaranteed.
Right. So section A, the innocent style of question, would be something that individuals would typically not feel any pressure or any hesitation to answer. So something like, do you enjoy eating fruit? Or is that right?
Yeah, and it's a bit known frequency. We know the frequency of the section A questions.
Right. So you need to know the frequency, how likely it is that the population will respond yes to the innocent question. And when you get the total portion of responses back to mathematically tease out the likelihood of saying yes to question B.
Yes. And when you gather all the questionnaires, you cannot say if this person has answered yes to this question or not, because the yes or no is given to the total question. You don't know which section the respondent has answered.
Right, so it doesn't allow you to match up individual responses to specific questions, but gives you a chance to say overall the portion of the sample that engaged in one behavior or another is a certain level.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's right.
So the actual mathematics of doing that are fairly straightforward, but beyond the time that we have for this podcast, so maybe I'll move on a little bit and ask you to tell us how you defined disintegrity in the first place. What sorts of activities did you think it important to include, and what aided you in that decision?
It has a very different explanations. There are lots of studies with different explanations about academic disintegrity, but generally speaking, it is everything that against honesty and integrity in a university or in an academic environment. For example, we have research misconduct, like data fabrication, data falsification, or plagiarism. And we have some clinical misconduct, like reporting abnormal physical exams as normal, or fabricating a part of a patient history, or, for example, buying hospital ships, selling hospital ships, stealing hospital drugs. And we have some other types of misconduct, for example, escaping teamwork, or helping other students to cheat, or cheating in exams. We reviewed literature and we selected most of these items from literature, but we added some types of disintegrity, which we thought that they are specific to our society. For example, selling hospital ships, we think that they are specific to Iran because I haven't seen these types of misconducts in other studies.
So in the paper, you report the proportion of students who report having engaged in each behavior, and there's quite a wide range from 93% impersonating an absent person in class down to 0% of stealing hospital drugs. Did you notice anything that surprised you in terms of how frequently that behavior occurred?
Before performing this research, I knew that cheating is frequent among students, especially cheating in exams or helping other students to cheat in exams or impersonating an absent person in a class, because most of the students do not consider these things as academic disintegrity. But to our surprise, some other kinds of misconduct, such as selling hospital ships or buying hospital ships, were very common among the students. And more important is that many of the students did not consider these as disintegrities.
And that alone is probably the main issue in terms of what you would actually do with these proportions. Do you see the implications of the studies as providing information about how to start the discussion about moving students beyond some of these behaviors?
Yeah, I believe that if we know the real frequencies and if we give these frequencies to our academic staff or administrative staff, they can put on more restrictive strategies and policies to deal with these kinds of misconducts. I believe there should be some learning programs for students because they are not familiar with all types of academic disintegrity. It is necessary to teach them different types of academic disintegrity are defined, and then we should put some strategies to deal with these problems. In Iran, there have been a guideline for defining these types of misconducts and a written formal procedure for investigating these misconducts and for dealing with these misconducts, but it's just a few years since developing this guideline.
Yeah, it is quite startling. I would draw listeners' attention to the fact that almost half of your participants indicated that they didn't think helping people cheat on an exam was an indication of disintegrity. So it definitely seems like you have your work cut out for you, and I think it's a fair warning to others that they perhaps should be on the lookout for these things and start some discussion about what's considered appropriate and what's not within the professional environment. So maybe I can end by just asking you what's next for you.
I think I'm going to take greater sample size because I just studied students in two phases in the University of Medical Science. So I did not gather data from all the students. And I think something must be done about strategy to deal with this problem. And maybe I try to do this with some other colleagues.
Well, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate the effort you've put into actually trying to pin down some of these proportions. And again, it's not an easy data set to gather. And so the creativity of using the random response technique is something that you should be quite proud of. Just remind
Thank
our,
you.
yeah, and I'll just remind our listeners that the paper we've been discussing is entitled Academic Disintegrity Among Medical Students, a Randomized Response Technique Study. And the first author on that work who I've been speaking with is Sama Mortaz-Hejri. The paper will be released in the February 2013 issue of Medical Education, and I hope you all have a chance to read it and glean some of the insights that it provides. Thanks, Sama, for making time to speak with me again on a Friday night, and I'll look forward to seeing the rest of your work.
Thank you, Gavin. That was very nice talking to you about the study. Thank you very much.